introduce our main speaker for the evening, Barbara from San Diego.
Hi, I'm Barbara. I'm an alcoholic. Wow, look at all these people. And the neat thing is that I know so many of you. That is really special for me. Thank you, Felix and Al, for asking me to speak. It's an honor. And Jay, happy birthday. This is like old home week. Joni talking, Kathy talking, Jay taking cakes. It's pretty cool. So, my name is Barbara. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is August 1st, 1989. And I would really like to start with a little prayer. There's some people that I'm thinking about tonight, and I just want to send them some good vibes. God bless the alcoholic and addicts who still suffer in and out of these meetings. Amen. Brenda, are you back there? And Tom? I think those are our newcomers. Welcome. And any other newcomers who haven't introduced themselves, you're in the right place. It's a heck of a good way to live. And you couldn't have told me that before I got here. I could not imagine what life would be like without drinking and using, and I certainly didn't think it was going to be any fun at all. I was born in Florida in the 40s. I lived four or five different places before I was 5 years old, and I think that's probably where I got that geographic idea in my head, because I picked up on that later on. And ended up with my family in Southern California, was raised in Southern California in the 50s, and I was a really good girl, and I studied hard, and I had good grades, and it was a very innocent kind of a time. But then when I was 15, my parents, who were both physical education teachers, decided to take a sabbatical leave of absence, and we were all going to go to Europe for a year. And I didn't want to go. I didn't want to leave my friends, you know. And it was a wonderful opportunity, and of course we did go, but that was the first big resentment I had, too. And I felt really like a fish out of water, you know. We saw a lot of wonderful things, and our family bonded. We were always doing a lot of good family things, and my brother and I learned to ski and speak French and eat Swiss chocolates with kirsch in them. And I, you know, it was not bad, but I really felt like a fish out of water. And I had trouble, getting along with people and meeting people, and I was shy. And so then after a year, we came back, and I had to start all over again, meeting new people, and I was shy and uncomfortable and full of fear. And so that was my second year of high school, was in Venice, California. Then we moved, and I went to my third high school. And here we are, starting over again, meeting new people. I'm full of fear. And my parents drank every day. I watched them drink. They have not a problem with drinking. They were able to handle their drinking, and I thought that I would be able to do that, too. So I decided to make up for lost time. I had never tried drinking, and I went into their liquor cabinet when they were gone, stole the booze, drank a bunch of vodka, put some orange juice in it because that was the healthy stuff, and I didn't have a clue about how to drink or what to do. I just chugged it down. I did some bizarre things, blacked out, threw up, was sick at least for the next day. It seemed like forever. And I lied to my parents, told them I had the flu, and then I blamed them for not teaching me how to drink. And that's pretty much how my drinking career continued. You know, I just stole and drank and got drunk, blacked out, threw up, lied, and blamed. When I was, I graduated from high school. That was a good thing. I went off to college, and that was quite the party. I went to Santa Barbara to go to school. It was quite the party school, and I was on my own for really the first time in my life, and I just drank. I did not go to class. I flunked out, like, boom, just like that. And it was quite the surprise. And how I deal with that, how I deal with fear and anger and frustration, and as I drink and I run. So I drank and I hitchhiked to Northern California. That was the way I could deal with that. Eventually, of course, you have to come back and try to clean up the wreckage. but my patterns were pretty well established. So I got my own place, moved out of my parents' house because there were too many rules there. And they're very loving, supportive, kind people, you know, and they still are today. I feel very, very lucky to still have them in my life today. They're both in their 90s. And I don't know, they might still drink every day. I don't know. but they're good people. But I couldn't handle being around that. That was too much. So I went off and where I could drink how I wanted to drink. I decided that I was going to travel. This is where my geographics really started, and I decided to hitchhike around different countries. So I went to New Zealand, and I went to Asia, and I emigrated to Australia, and I was just the woman of the world, and drinking, and I had discovered drugs by then, too. You know, it was the 60s, and so that was kind of in there, too, and especially in Asia, I have to admit that Thai whiskey was one of my favorite things in the whole world, and it was really nice to be able to get Thai sticks and just smoke them right on the street. I mean, it was just so open at that time. Vietnam was happening, and there was a lot of R&R going on, and it was kind of a different attitude. But I ended up back in the United States and decided to go back to school. I was living with a group of people, and my parents called it the commune. and I met Jim in a bar one night, and he was cute, sensitive, just got back from Vietnam. So he moved in, and in a matter of a couple of months, I guess, I don't know, we were married. And he drank like I did. He drank more than I did. He really had a problem. And I surrounded myself with people who drank more than I did because I could hold down the job. I could pay the bills. I was not as bad as that. Well, that didn't last that long, and I moved again. I've lived in a lot of different states. So I moved to Yellowstone National Park, and then I moved to Big Bend National Park, and then I moved to Northern California and got a divorce from Jim. Moved to Jackson, Wyoming, and I'm drinking through all this. I'm camping, and I'm drinking, and I'm just having a great time. And there was no problem. Just quit the job, move, camp for a while, however long it took you to get there. Get to wherever you were getting, and get another job. And that's what I did for quite a while. So I settled in Jackson for 5 years. That was a kind of a record. That was a long time. And Bob became my second husband. And we moved to the Rocky Mountains of Colorado and did the Pioneer Trip with... you know, bake your own bread and build your own house. And was making gallons of Kahlua and growing mushrooms in the basement. And actually that lasted for quite a while. But we had to move to Arizona for a while and back. And, you know, it was kind of like, can't really stay in one place too long. But I was getting suicidal, you know, this drinking and drugging wasn't working for me anymore, and it hadn't worked for a long time. And I knew a gal who had moved to San Diego, a gal that I drank with, and evidently I was talking to her on the phone. I don't know, I was in a blackout and telling her how I was writing my will and, you know, I was just, it was all, you know, not worth doing anymore. And she said, oh, I'm getting married in San Diego on February 14th. How romantic. And would I please be in her wedding? And I thought, well, that's nice. She said, don't worry about getting the dress. I'll take care of everything for you. Just come to San Diego. And actually, she probably saved my life because I did come here. Bob was still in Colorado, and 6 weeks later I went back to Colorado and informed him that we were moving, that San Diego was much nicer than that place in Colorado, and he didn't show up. But I was here, and I, for the first time, really didn't have anybody in my life to blame anything on. And because I had always done that. It was the weather, it was the people, it was the job, it was whatever it was that would keep me drinking. And there wasn't anybody. Like Stuart had talked about, I had no friends. I had pushed everybody out of my life. And all I did was just try to hang on and get through the day and pass out, get up, do it again the next day. And I got a job, a miracle, and I was losing that job. I was on probation, and I knew that if I lost that job, that was going to be the very last job I was ever going to get. And San Diego was the end of the line. You know, I had been everywhere. I had done everything, and that was it. I didn't know what else to do. And there was a neighbor. Her name was Laura, and she was really a nice gal. She welcomed me to the neighborhood when I moved there, and she listened to me whine and complain about how horrible life was, and as I walked around with my coffee mug full of booze. She never said anything about that. And then one day, I was telling her how I just felt sick all the time, and I threw up every day because I drank every day. No wonder I felt sick all the time. And she said, you know, you might feel better if you quit drinking. And I had never, ever considered that. Why would you do that? But I didn't want to feel like I was feeling. That was the whole thing. I had always been drinking and drugging to change how I felt. And I didn't like how I was feeling. The drinking wasn't making it any better. In fact, everything was getting worse and worse and worse. And I was really scared about losing that job. So I thought, great, you know, I'll just quit drinking. Whenever I make up my mind to do something, I just go ahead and do it. That's how I'd lived my life. And it never entered my mind that I wouldn't be able to do it. And when I discovered that after I had quit drinking, somebody in my body went and bought a bottle. And when I saw that there, I drank it. You know, that really scared me. And I thought, well, you know, maybe I do have a little problem with this drinking. Not like Jim, not like Bob, not like those other people. Maybe just a little problem. And I ended up in my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And there are people here tonight who were at that first meeting when I walked in. And that's a really neat thing, to have that continuity, because I didn't have any history with people. You know, I was always leaving. And so it's really neat to have all these years now knowing the same people. And those people at that Monday night meeting, those women, just opened up their arms to me and said, welcome, keep coming back. You don't have to feel like you're feeling anymore. That's what I heard. You know, nothing about God, nothing about quitting drinking, nothing about drugs, just you don't have to feel like you're feeling anymore. They said, come to meetings, come to a meeting every day. Try not to drink in between meetings. Sounded like a reasonable request. And the miracle was that I haven't had a drink since that Sunday before that meeting. That is like a miracle to me. I drank every day for a long time, and all of a sudden, I was not drinking. I don't know. Excuse me. So, but I was still doing the drugs. And it was suggested that that the program of Alcoholics Anonymous works better if you're clean and sober. And I had asked a woman to be my sponsor, and she said that she would love to sponsor me, but that she only sponsored women who were clean and sober. So it was all kind of like coming down. And she said that it would probably be good for me to reset my sobriety date, and that if I needed help, she would be there. And that's the part of Alcoholics Anonymous that always gets to me. It's that we program. It's like we don't have to do any of this alone. She was there. There are other people who were there to help me make those changes and go through that. It's such a scary thing. I mean, I really thought that I was not going to be able to live without the drugs and the alcohol, because I had not done that in so long. I didn't know how anybody could do that. And started out on this new journey. And we went to meetings every single day, my sponsor and I. And I didn't drink, and I didn't do any drugs. And I don't remember a lot of that. You know, I think that's a blessing. I was really in a fog. I know that I went to work somehow, that I didn't lose that job. In fact, I still have that job today. And this is almost 20 years later that this is happening, so that's like a miracle. And we started working the steps, and my life started to change. And I didn't believe in God when I got here. I didn't think I was an alcoholic. I didn't even know what an alcoholic was, but I'm sure I wasn't one of those, you know. In fact, I thought an alcoholic was that person over there. We all kind of have this idea of what an alcoholic is, and it's not us. You know, so I learned that, you know what, I am an alcoholic, and I admitted that to my innermost self. And I remember when it went from my head to my heart, and I called my sponsor and said, Susan, I'm an alcoholic. She said, yeah. Yeah, that's not all she said, but that's what she said. You know, and that was a really big thing. That was a really important step to make. And through the rest of the steps, you know, I started to learn who Barbara is. And I learned some of those causes and conditions, why I drank, started to address those. Started to find a God of my own understanding, a higher power. And that keeps evolving today, which is a great thing. I've been able to repair relationships, build new relationships, and unhealthy relationships, and just keep walking one day at a time, doing the deal. When I was 5 years sober, my first 5 years was wonderful. I lived alone, and I was able to just go to meetings all the time, and I got totally immersed in Alcoholics Anonymous. I hadn't had any fun in a really long time. You know, life was very much, it was just so dreary and so hard, and I was so old and so tired when I got here. Everything was hard. And I started to feel better, and it was kind of like I was having a second childhood, and I was starting to learn how to do all those things that I had been doing, you know, loaded and drunk, and learning to do them sober, and learning to have fun with life, and that it was okay to make mistakes, and we could still laugh at ourselves and move on. And all these were new, totally new things to me. And I had done a lot of camping before Alcoholics Anonymous. I had been raised with that. You know, my family was very much outdoorsy. And my higher power at the beginning was nature. And I always do feel a wonderful thing being outside. But I learned in AA that there's a difference between camping and a camp out, because the camp out was very quiet. I mean, it was very loud. The camping that I used to do was by myself, communing with the trees or whatever. And the camp outs that I started going to, people would talk all night, and they'd be by the campfire, and they'd have all these meetings all the time, and it was a whole different deal. So I started to learn about the fellowship, and I started to have fun. I started to do everything. I always like to do everything, and so I started doing everything in AA. I would go to as many meetings as I could. I would go to all the dances and the campouts and the you name it. I was trying to do it, and it was really fun. I had a really good time. And I remember going on a walk with Jay, and we came in last at the convention walk, you know, but we were talking the whole time, and we were having a good time. And it was fun. It was really fun. And doing all this without drinking was just really a miracle. So I had all that time to really concentrate on me and get my foundation in AA. And so when I was 5 years sober, I decided, finally, everybody kept asking me, did you ever get that divorce from Bob? No, not yet. So at 5 years sober, we started taking the steps to do that. And it was still hard even then, although I had made amends to him, and you know, our relationship was on a real different level. But he continued to drink and use. He had no desire to get clean and sober, and we really didn't have anything in common anymore. And so I got that divorce, and I remember my sponsor saying, you know what, you just have to forget about all these it isn't fairs, and you deserve this, and the house should be yours, and all this stuff. She said, you know, you just need to get the divorce, just to get the divorce so that you can move on. And all that other stuff will just work itself out. It took me 5 years to get to the point where I was ready to do that. And so he kept the house, which I went back and looked at it, and I thought, no, I don't want to live here anyway, you know. And miracle of miracle, he came up with some money, and so I was able to pay off my car. So my sponsor pointed out that I ended up with a lot more than I ever even asked for. You know, I ended up with a car that was paid for, and I got rid of a house I didn't even want. So it all worked out just perfectly. And the next year, I'm camping with a girlfriend. We're in Beaver, Utah, the AA camp out. And lo and behold, there's this cute guy. And it really was a God thing. It was an amazing thing. It's like when you hear that, you close one door and another one opens. I had really just gone through the divorce, and I'd really cleansed, and I was ready to move on, and I felt really good. And I met this man who was living in Utah at the time, and he had been going to these campouts for several years, and we started talking, and it turned out that we had planned the exact same trip after the campout convention thing. And I was going to do my independent woman camping deal, which I hadn't really done since I'd gotten sober. So this was a big deal for me to do this by myself. I had all my camping equipment. I had my plan laid out. I was going to go to Zion and Bryce and do the little loop and spend a week and, you know. And here's Scott who says, oh, yeah, I've got all my camping stuff, and I'm going to go to Zion and Bryce, and I'm going to spend the week. And then we went, oh, my gosh, this is a God thing. And we started, so we caravaned, and we discovered that we had a lot in common, not just our sobriety, but the way we looked at things and the things that attracted our attention and our hiking abilities. I mean, just a lot of things in common. And we talked like we'd known each other forever. And it was like, oh, what's going on? And I remember coming back,
and going to that women's meeting, that Monday night women's meeting, and saying, wow, you know, I met this guy and I really like him. And I had never said that before. You know, I had not really dated in sobriety. I'd done mainly things in groups, which I highly recommend. It was wonderful. But this was like a different deal. And so eventually Scott moved here, and we've been together like 12 or 13 years now. And that is like an amazing thing. That's a record for both of us. And so when I thought that there was not going to be any fun in sobriety, I was wrong. And when I thought that that was the end of the road, that there wasn't anything else left in my life, I was wrong. Because everything started again, and on such a better level. I want to talk a little bit about service, too. I don't know why. I think probably because I just like to try everything, and so I just decided to try every service commitment I could find and see if there was, you know, if I liked one better than another or what. I just don't want to miss anything. So I started doing different service commitments, and it's such a neat thing, you know. It's not like I really wanted to help people or really be of service. I don't think so. It was because I wanted to feel a part of, and I wanted to have fun in my life, and I wanted to do something that felt good. And that's what I found. That's what I found. So there are so many different areas. You know, AA is all volunteer. And so we can volunteer anywhere, and it's a good thing. And so try everything, you know. Try them all. Find out the one you like the best, and go with it, you know, because it's really fun. And I think probably right now my most favorite way of being of service is through sponsorship, and I love the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I love the steps. I love the traditions. I'm learning about those concepts, but they're kind of harder to get. And I just love passing it on. You know, it's like it was so freely given to me. Those women just held out their arms, you know, said, we'll be there. We'll be there whenever you want, you know, and we'll help you, and we'll all do this together, and we'll help you go through all these scary things, and find out who you are, and help you find that God of your understanding, and be a member of society, and just start to learn to care about other people, and so life is good today. You know, I got sober when I was 45, and I feel so much younger today than I felt when I got here. I'll tell you that. I was very, very tired, and I was willing to do something. I don't know what. When my sponsor asked me if I was willing to go to any length, I said, well, that sounds pretty extreme, but I'll try, you know. And she said, do you believe in God? And I said, no. And she said, are you willing to try to find a power greater than yourself? And I said, yes, I'm willing to try. So that willingness to try is really all that's required, and it only has to be just a tiny little bit, a tiny little bit. At least it was for me, and then it grows from there. But we have to keep doing the deal, you know. I mean, I've seen people, you know, get tired of meetings, and they don't need Alcoholics Anonymous anymore, and maybe that drink really wouldn't hurt me because I've been sober a long time, you know. And this is a fatal disease. We die from this disease, and it's not the kind of a death that's just quick like that. sometimes. You know, sometimes it is. But sometimes it takes a long time, and what a horrible way to go. You know, I was doing that before I got here. I was dying slowly. It just wasn't happening quick enough. And I was too afraid to kill myself. And the book says, you know, you just come to the jumping off point. And if just that little bit of willingness and that little bit of something, whatever sparks you, to keep you coming back, you know, whether it's sponsoring or making coffee, the best coffee in the world, or whatever it is that you need to do, you know, whatever service commitment, if it's those campouts or those dances or whatever it is, it doesn't matter. Just keep coming back and keep doing it. And our lives change. And I know for me, not only has my life changed, but I have a life today. And I have a life that I enjoy, and I have a life that I want to share with other people. And my parents certainly changed when I got sober, as did a lot of other people in my life. It's amazing how that happened. And things just really improved. So thanks be to God, and thank you for letting me share with you tonight.